This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. A couple of days ago, the federal court upheld the guilty verdict in former Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib Razak's SRC International case. Najib is sentenced to 12 years in prison and fined 210 million ringgit. While there may be some narrow escape routes left for Najib, the fact of the matter is this. UMNO's kleptocrat poster boy is currently behind bars as we head towards GE15. So what does this mean for our political landscape moving forward? Joining me on the show today to discuss this is Dr. Bridget Welch, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Bridget. How are you?
Great. It's lovely to be here, as always.
Now, Bridget, the federal court upheld the guilty verdict. Najib is behind bars. How are you feeling about it? What are your overall thoughts?
I think this is a real pivotal moment for Malaysian political history. And I think, there are three different lenses to look at it. Right? The first, of course, is we can look at the merits of the verdict itself. I mean, it's a victory for accountability and a victory for the rule of law, especially the judiciary. I mean, I think the judiciary the day will go down in a day of history for judicial independence and a very thorough, very long-standing process of three different courts reviewing the details. And I think it speaks to these particular elements, speak to a strengthening of Malaysia's democracy, which I think is a counter narrative that people tend to not think about. I mean, I see, there's always these processes of social and political transformation are uneven and have different trajectories. But I think if we look at key institutions like the judiciary and the parliament, we see that has happened. So the first thing is this particular element of the victory. But I also think it also speaks to these real changes. For me, the moment that I thought about was the day that Anwar was beaten up and arrested in 1998. And this was 25 years ago with 1 month less. And it was and we talk about these as watershed defining moments in Malaysian history where the views of leaders or the views of the way leaders are being treated are being analyzed and experienced. In that time, we saw sympathy. We saw, the different perceptions of how leaders are and their legitimacy really fundamentally questioned 25 years ago. And I think those same things are playing out now in very different sets of ways.
Right. Now, how do you read the subsequent speeches and Facebook posts by Najib? He said that the trial was unfair. Then later he penned a letter to his family on Facebook addressing himself as daddy and talking about his quote-unquote sacrifices. How do you read all of this?
Well, I think we have to look at this narrative that he has been constructing in the last, not just in these letters, but basically in the last week of court appearances. It was, it was clearly, I felt, reflected contempt for the judicial process in many ways, and it was farcical in its drama. I mean, it took, Malaysian political soap opera to a different level in terms of looking at this particular court area. But there is a rational purpose underneath it, which is to create and build on the issues of sympathy and to create this context of he is a political persecuted martyr narrative. And, there was no challenges of the facts of the case. It was really about challenging those who were implementing the rule of law and how they were going about it. And so this letter fits within this particular sort of trying to evoke sympathy and to build a case for not only a pardon, but also to position himself as a quote unquote hero, human hero for UMNO longer term. It's calculating. And it's useful as we sort of step back. One of the things that Najib has been very successful as a political leader is that he has been very calculating in terms of the use of emotion. And it has been a very polarized circumstances. So for many of the people who were happy with the victory, it was a day of elation after a long period of anger. But for Najib, you know, he is building in these letters this concepts of sympathy, this sense of you know, trying to reconnect with his fan base, and it's extremely calculating in that context. And for some people, it's so calculating, it was nauseating.
Since you brought up sympathy, let's discuss some sentiments on the ground here. Because we saw uncles and aunties mostly outside the Palace of Justice chanting Bosku. We saw about 150 ardent Najib supporters yesterday standing outside the King's Palace to submit a memorandum of pardon. But how concrete, Bridget, is his support on the ground? How much support does he really have among the Malaysian masses?
It's a very interesting question. I think Najib's political support has always been in some ways over-exaggerated because he has such a very savvy social media that allows him to dominate the media narrative. I think what has been interesting to watch is how little that support has been openly in that context after this victory for the rule of law and Najib being jailed. He does have his core supporters. They're not going to go away. They don't see him as guilty. They don't see him as having done anything wrong. What's happened is that Najib's, by him being jailed, his sources of power are shifting. So his control of the social media, control of resources, the power of legacy, the sense of competency among a group of relatively weak leaders and him still standing tall within those areas, those things are not going to have the same salience from jail. So this goes back to what we said earlier. He's now building this martyr narrative of the hero for Umno in that context. He and his core supporters are not going to change their perspective in any way. And the question becomes, what happens to the middle ground? The people who are wanting to give him the benefit of the doubt, but at the same juncture, you know, would like the country to move on. And this is the tension that is happening right now, right? There are tremendous pressures to want to move forward in this context, to move away from the shame that Najib has brought. As he provokes sympathy, he's also basically reminding people of shame. Right. And people want to move away from that from a psychological point of view, and and the country needs to move forward from that perspective. But he's calculating, and he uses these emotions in a particular way. So this power of wanting to move forward with the recognition that he was and has been a Malaysian leader for decades. And he was a prime minister for 9 years. Right. And not all of what Najib did was damaging. All right. I think that one has to be fair and recognize that there were some many good legacies of Najib's tenure in terms of, for example, changing the social safety net away from ethnic politics, by way of example, trying to create a new economic model. He did introduce initially on some changes to the GLCs. Unfortunately, many of those have been reversed, but at the same time, we can see some of that. And of course, this scandal really has overshadowed and taken over and of his legacy. And the thing is that he ended up using the institutions for himself and the party for himself. And so these negative things overpower some of the positives. But for people who are in his support base, those positive things of him helping him, providing social safety nets, providing patronage, putting Malaysia in a different way on the international stage, you know, they will remain loyal. And this is the challenge, is how to work with people who see these things in a particular lens of unfairness. And I do think it's more than 150 people. And Najib is going to keep trying to play that sympathy. I mean, every time he's going to be in a courtroom, he's going to be playing it. He's not going to be in jail. He's going to be in the courtroom with the four cases. So it's going to be an ongoing drama that is going to have elements of this kind of farcical, but at the same time, calculating strategy.
Right. Where does this leave Najib's political career? Is it the end of it? Will he lose his MP seat?
And thing in Malaysian politics is people have 9 lives, you know, well, maybe 10, you know,
right.
Anwar Ibrahim has multiple lives, mm-hmm. Okay, politically, jailed and pardoned. in that circumstances. Mahathir has had many political lives. I do not rule out Najib Tun Razak coming back in politics. But I do feel for the short and medium term that he will be in jail in that period. I believe he will lose his MPship. And I think he is prepared already by slating in the deal that was made for his son to take over that seat. And he have somebody else watching that particular seat itself. I expect that he will have probably more access to social media than one would expect, things that he'll be using for the press. So I think he will be a player in terms of some of the issues that are being raised. And of course, he will try to wield his influence. My initial expectation is that he may soon get sick and may not be in jail, but maybe in a hospital circumstances, as opposed to in the jail itself. I hope that he doesn't genuinely get sick. But I think that, you know, we've seen these patterns and these dynamics at play. And of course, they create a particular kind of cynicism that it breeds. A lot of the things that was been interesting about the response in the last few days has been the cynicism. People immediately started talking about pardon. People immediately talking about him getting special treatment. You know, everybody in some ways has a certain degree of stunness about what happened. Right. Of course, the person who was the most stunned was Najib himself. I mean, I think it was very clear in his emotions and his facial expressions and others that for him it was unfathomable that a son of a prime minister, a former prime minister, someone of the most top elite was now heading to prison. You could see it in his facial expression, the sweat, everything. It was a huge shock in that context. But it was equally a shock for his supporters and for the party and for many parts of the country who, you know, because it came so fast because of the farcical way that the legal case was handled this last week, which I think his lawyers did a tremendous disservice for him too.
On the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, Malaysia. After the break, we discuss the internal dynamics of UMNO. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute, Malaysia. And we're discussing Najib. He's been sent to prison, so what next? Bridget, I'm wondering, what about support within UMNO itself right now? We know that GE14 had split UMNO into various factions. Things have only heated up over the past couple of years. What is the impact of Najib's prison sentence on the internal dynamics of UMNO?
You know, there was a game plan. Okay, the game plan was UMNO goes to elections, the cases go away. Najib stays aside for a while, but other leaders are able to take over. But Najib, of course, gets his independence and remains an important leader in this process. That was plan A. And then plan B was to bring down the government if Ismail Sabri did not play ball with elections. And that meant that you would have had some people from UMNO leave the government in that context. What we saw in the last week was tremendous drama within the party, where it became clear that Ismail Sabri had played this situation quite well from a perspective of the party by doing nothing. and that context, Zahid and Najib, I think, ended up being betrayed by Ismail Sabri because elections were not called and the court processes moved forward and he didn't interfere in the court processes and he didn't protect them. And what I think it became clear is that, you know, we saw in the number of people who showed up in the divisional meetings, on the meetings that were called at the last minute, which I think were very poorly done because it showed how weak Zahid actually was. The fact is that they no longer have the majority. UMNO as a party, people in the ranks go to places of political security. And Ismail Sabri gains in that regard, but not completely. But Zahid and Najib have lost that.
Right.
Now, but they are still powerful because they control the levers of the party, and they will be, and there's a political bureau meeting taking place that will decide what the party chooses to do in that context. I think it has been extremely telling that we've seen two different things play out. One is that there's been a show of support for Najib across the board, but there has not been a concrete call for action or a particular plan.
Right.
Because the party is now in moving towards being leaderless.
Right. So will UMNO benefit more from distancing itself from Najib or to turn Najib into a sort of martyr?
I think that's part of the tension, right? Now, so we used to people talk about the court cluster versus, the Ismail Sabri.
Right.
That it is, it's about individuals. I think that the big decision now is about whether or not the party will move on, or whether or not it will be continued to be held by the legacy and fight that. The party benefits from both,
Right.
and it will probably want to have its cake and eat it too, right? In the sense that it will try to build a martyr position to rally the base, but at the same time want to move on in this leadership. But the problem with the move on is that there is no agreement on who will become leader. So the competition, the fulcrum has moved away from Zahid, who has kind of been acting as if he is going to be in charge. He's facing his own court case, and the scandal, the LCS scandal, will badly hurt him. So now it's about Ismail Sabri versus other contenders, Toqmat, Hishamuddin, others inside the party. And I think what we're going to see is a battle inside for a second generation leadership. And of course, that cannot happen through a party election, because they've made an amendment that doesn't
Right.
allow a party election. So what they have de facto now, I think we're going to see how the party reaches some sort of agreement among the different sets of leaders. It was clear very early on that many of them recognized Najib was going to go to jail, but many of them were in large sections of denial. Toqmat was perhaps the most adamant of recognizing he would go to jail, coming out and saying so, but others we're in denial, and UMNO has been in denial, and now it's in a situation where it doesn't have a leader, it doesn't have a plan, it has the splits, and Ismail Sabri, being the prime minister, is in a position offers some security, but at the same time, he's extremely vulnerable because he's the one who's allowed their former leader to go to jail.
How likely do you think Bridget is is Najib to receive a royal pardon?
It is my view that he will receive a pardon.
Right.
But the question becomes at what time will he receive the pardon, and what sort of what will be the context at that particular time? The man is 69. He was the former prime minister of the country.
Right.
The crimes are terrible. There are four other cases coming forward. You pardon now, and then he has other cases and convictions. So the
Right.
cases need to move forward to closure. What is good, I find it very ironic that the push to delay, delay, and delay will now move to a push to rush, rush, rush to reach some, because they will want to
Right.
move through closure on these cases, or maybe not, right? I think that there will be some pressure wanting to rush, but at the same time, I think that there is still a perception that these cases will go away when a new government it comes in if UMNO wins. But now what has happened is there's no guarantee that UMNO wins. But I think if we look at the history of political cases and pardons, many leaders have been pardoned after serving some time. And I think Najib will be among that. I feel that it is, I think it's not been constructive, that the focus is, we've already seen a politicization over the role of issue of pardons. I think Bursay's petition, for example, I don't think is a constructive process, because it feeds the political polarization that exists within Malaysia,
Right.
as does people coming out and supporting for a pardon. But this is the other the flip side, of course, is this is what democracy is all about. You have people who present different perspectives. They engage in these different issues. And if we look at it from a perspective historically, the fact that people could be coming out and doing petitions and protests about a royal pardon would have been unthought of even 5 years ago in
Right.
Malaysian politics. And so we have there's these real huge changes that are taking place where people are focusing on the pardon. I do think that for the international community the fact that a prime minister has been put in jail, that he is already serving time, that there is an acknowledgement of criminality, from the legal case, I think is a really important point for Malaysia's international reputation and helping to build its reputation and bring in investment. A pardon may be necessary down the line from the perspective of helping with closure. We never know in that context. So I do feel that it is highly likely. It is my personal view that it should take some time for that to happen.
We know, and you have alluded to this, throughout the conversation as well, that this is G15 is going to be incredibly important. How important is it, and how important of a juncture are we in right now?
I think none of the parties were ready for what happened, and none of the coalitions were. I mean, and you can see, you know, let's take each of them in this regard, right? UMNO is now leaderless, and it is now facing the fact that a second of its leaders or multiple leaders are now going to potentially be convicted if it's based on the evidence. I think the party has to recognize when a second president of their party goes to jail, it's not going to help them in that context from a perspective of the people who don't like them. And I think that, you know, someone like Zahid should be put on leave. New leaders should be allowed to move forward and they can help to build their base. But Zahid, of course, is not giving up power. And the fact that he had been in that position for such a time is one of the weaknesses of the party. But I do feel that UMNO also benefits from people there being able to move on and to have these leaders be in jail and standing up for allowing those leaders to go to jail. And so I think because UMNO is in the strongest, I think despite the crisis, I believe UMNO is in a very strong position electorally. PAS is benefiting perhaps the most from the support change in Malay support in that context. If you'll notice, their narrative has been one that has been sympathetic in that context, building on sort of that kind of emotional element. And that's really about trying to win over some of UMNO supporters to them, because they're never going to win Pakatan Harapan supporters with that particular element. I think Pakatan Harapan has no narrative about this. You know, the only person who's been extremely vocal about it has been Mat Sabu from Amana, who came out and said, you know, this is nothing, not something to celebrate, although many others have quietly, openly celebrated, but without sort of trying to rub salt into the wounds of this process. And then, of course, what we see with Bersatu is that Muhyiddin Yassin has taken credit for this. Why am I telling you these different narratives, Ben? Is that the focus point is very much on the case. It's not where the country is moving. It's not what are the things that people care about. You know, there is no the you know, because this pivotal moment, it's so impactful, everyone is still responding to that. Right. So the campaigns for GE15 are really quite shallow. This is partly why I believe elections will be next year, because no one is ready. And the only person who's in slightly a stronger position is Mal Sabri, because he is in a position of governance and has the resources and others and the attention that can galvanize for that. But I don't believe that this event really strengthens Pakatan Harapan, yes, its core supporters will recognize something came out of it. But I think the new supporters, which it will need to win, or the people who have left it, I'm not sure that's enough to bring them back to Pakatan Harapan. And there has been no leadership in Pakatan Harapan as well.
And that's what I want to ask next, right, Bridget? Because for the longest time, especially over the past couple of years, you've had this sense, feeling of disillusionment among the electorate, especially among younger people, this idea that everything is broken, all politicians are the same, what's the point of voting, and so on and so forth. Do you think this juncture that we are in which Najib has been sent to prison sort of restores people's faith in the processes?
It's quite impactful. Right? Mm-hmm. It does have, people feel that their vote mattered. People feel that they finally got justice. And keep in mind, I know people felt it was 4 years is a long time, but the Anwar case was 6 years. Right. And many, many other legal cases in other countries take many years. And there are many other leaders who've done illegal things that have not even faced courts in other countries. Right. So I think Malaysia has a lot to be proud for in terms of taking the prime minister to court and having a conviction. I think that ultimately, however, the issue of whether or not Najib goes to jail or whether or not he stays in jail are not the things that are going to affect everybody's lives.
Right.
What is important is what's done now to address the corruption. And this is not, nothing is happening in that regard. And what policies are in place to begin to start to address the concerns of inequality and to move the economy in a way that is not deepening the inequality, which is happening now, and to kind of create a restore kind of confidence. Now, but I think, you know, symbolically, this case really shows that Malaysia is, the changes that are happening are not all negative.
Right.
And that, you know, it embodies that set of element when I began the conversation earlier about how we see that there are a strengthening of democratic practices and things can happen. The unexpected can happen when people do participate and do engage. And this would not have happened without Malaysians voting and participating, speaking out, protesting at very high risks. And keep in mind those years of 2015 to 16 were very, very repressive years in contemporary history. So there is a reason to acknowledge and even celebrate some of the changes that are taking place. But it can't be about one person. It has to be about fixing the system more broadly.
How important is it for Pakatan Harapan or everyone on the opposition side, or all political parties for that matter, to sort of restructure, like you said, and focus on bread and butter issues? Because on the one hand, you know, when we go on Twitter, among the very progressive sort of bubble, people who are always tweeting and yelling about politics, and people who, you know, journalists, activists, so on and so forth, academics, there was this, if you are someone who doesn't support Barisan Nasional and Najib, there was this sense of celebration. Equally, if you are you're very in tune with politics, but you're perhaps a Barisan Nasional and pro-Najib person, there was a lot of sadness and anger a little bit. But when I talk to my just friends who are not within the political sphere necessarily, they are just, you know, going about their days. They are like, yo, okay, yeah, that's good that, you know, a guilty person is now in prison and corruption is bad. But, you know, they're just going about their days. You know, they are thinking about their issues, their wages, their mortgages and things like that. Is that the sense that you get as well?
Look, half the country is not interested in politics. And what we've seen is the number of people interested in politics has dropped during this period of time. And part of that is as a result of having to deal with survival. And part of it is that there's a lot of disappointment and disengagement from political life because, you know, hopes were moved and others not realized. I feel that this is where right now in the next few months, it's going to be interesting whether or not the system moves away from Najib this, Najib that, to a much more constructive type of political narrative. I'm not optimistic that will happen because Najib will try to keep his name in the mindset of others. He will continue to do that. I don't think he has put in place enough of a support mechanism to have it sustainable while he's in prison, because I think the party will move away from him. Parts of the party want to move away from him. It's in their interest. They don't want this leader anymore. They want younger leaders to come up. And the party needs to move on from that. But the fact is that there we will see this kind of Najib this, Najib that individual narrative. And I think Pakatan Harapan is guilty of this narrative as much as UMNO is. These types of, you know, Najib this, Najib that narrative doesn't engender and engage large sections of the electorate. especially the young electorate, who want to focus on the here and now, want to, other things to give them hope, give them direction and governance. And, you know, for people who put things, you know, everybody in Malaysia, most people in Malaysia knew about, you know, the case. Not everybody spent the whole day not working and following the news, you know, but I think that, you know, it really hit home within the period of time that this had happened. But their lives didn't change. Even if the emotions were there, the lives haven't changed. And this is where the burden rests on the younger leaders of the country to find more solutions to the issues that people are facing. The challenge is now not to just make this about just about the judiciary, but to move to other areas of reform that are urgently needed from the perspective of the MACC, the Election Commission, term limits, police reform, and to think about policies that are going to address the social safety net and to figure out how the real problem of revenue problems that the country is facing in a way that is inclusive. And this is really, really going to be challenging is moving forward. But, you know, what we have seen is that Malaysians and some of Malaysian leaders are rising to the challenge, even if they do it in a way that is not necessarily seen as making decisive decisions.
All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, Bridget, would you have some final thoughts or a final message for us?
I want to take a moment to wish everyone happy Independence Day, Merdeka Day. I think, you know, Malaysia is a wonderful country. There's a lot to be proud of. I know for people in Sabah and Sarawak, August 31st is not their day, and they'll have their day soon. But I would also say that, you know, I'm wishing them and thinking about them as well.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Bridget. That was Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.